deepest darkness of Dromund-Kos, to the smelly sewers of Nar Shaddaa, to the brightest light that shine on Tython. This is Flashpoint.
Everyone, welcome to episode. Sorry, I'm laughing before I even start. Episode 57 of Flashpoint. It's a bit of a different one again this episode because Christy is moved house today, so she won't be joining us. So big hi to you, Christy, and hope it's all gone well. And in her place, we actually have two people who both have many runs on the board with this podcast. First is Matthew Scope Pierce. How are you, mate? It's been a few episodes again.
Yeah, pretty good, mate.
And also one of the most legendary co-hosts ever to appear on this podcast, Mark. How are you?
I am fantastic, thank you.
Good. Good to have you back. And Simon, how are you?
I'm excited.
You're excited, like Big Kev.
No, nothing like that.
God rest his soul. All right, so we actually do, I know I say it every time we've got a lot to talk about, we actually have a hell of a running sheet this episode, so let's jump straight into it with Republic News.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Republic News. So let's do a quick round. Who hasn't played Star Wars The Old Republic over the last 3 weeks?
Me.
Yeah, so Mark, that's okay, because we're saving you up for Neverwinter later, that's all good. And Simon, you jumped in for a little while?
I did, yes, have a bit of a look around, realised that all my key bindings and someone completely screwed up because I was playing on a new computer. So, yeah, that was fun. I was basically running around in circles.
So for our regular listeners, Simon's had some massive computer problems and finally has a killer PC back up and running and is gaming, which sort of helps on a gaming podcast.
Yeah, just a bit.
So good stuff. And Matthew, you had a go?
Oh, yeah, I play it every day still. So, not as much as I used to, unfortunately, but I still play it every day, try and get an hour or two in.
Yeah, and I can certainly vouch. I've put in many an hour over the last 3 weeks. So the 2.1 update went live, and I'm losing track of time. I think it was Tuesday before last now. And that was the one. Sorry, Matthew?
That's right. 2.1 was the... the update to the cartel and the appearance stuff, wasn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
So the appearance stuff and being able to change your name and all that sort of stuff. So I was actually a bit unreasonably excited about this because my ridiculously named trooper, Toroz Dave, needed a rename, and I'm pleased to report that he's now called Twonkalonk McGurkin Squirt for all the role players out there. So that was great. I can vouch for the fact the name change works very easily and a few other MMOs could learn something from that. Matthew, you've been playing it every day. Any other big standouts for you? Or it was really just the cartel market and those few things, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed with the Cathar. I was thinking, oh, yeah, I might actually try it out. But then when it really came around to it, I had a look at it. You know how you can go to the Republic fleet or the Imperial fleet and try before you buy kind of thing. And I was looking through it. I'm like, I thought they would have put more customization options out there. I mean, I was looking at my own race and I'm, you know, like a human and I only had like one or two new hairdos and stuff. I'm like, okay, so there's practically nothing worth my time. And then I looked at it and it's like, oh, they want real life money for it. I'm like, okay. I'll wait and see if ever they add that to the GTN, because that's where I get most of my cartel stuff from, because I'm a stingy prick. I just wait for them to sell them for in-game credits, and then I'll go out to run a few dailies on all my 12 or 15 alts and, you know, amass a few million credits and go and buy the stuff. But, yeah, other than that, it's pretty good.
Yeah. And, Simon, from your brief look around, what's your take? No big differences for you? As I said, getting your head around the key bindings can take time on its own.
Well, yeah, especially when you've got an Astromo and a, what is it, a G600 or a mouse with as many buttons as my bloody keyboard does. But, as you said, the name change, I did that with one of my characters as well. Not so much a name change as correcting the spelling, which happened when I brought the character over from the West Coast server. Someone already had my name, so I had to, instead of a C, I had to use a K. So it was immense satisfaction in getting that corrected. Although 1,000 cartel coins
to do that, yeah,
felt a little steep. I mean, okay, it only works out to about, what, $10 US, roughly. That's still a fair whack. But as you say, that was effortless. Change it, log out, log back in. It's there. It's immediate. Yeah, that was absolutely flawless. The appearance chamber thingamabob seems to work really well. I like the way they highlighted if any of the sliders have got anything additional to what was available to you when you originally created the character. It's got that kind of pink highlight up one end. That was good, although I have to admit, pink hair, white eyes, no thank you. Not really that interested. That's not my Star Wars as far as I'm concerned, although someone's probably going to pull me up on that. Also, it's a little bit scary just watching that counter creeping up, especially when you hit one of the pink options. It really shot up. So fortunately, I'm quite happy with the way most of my characters look, so I won't be using it. But yeah, it seems pretty easy to use. Again, a bit of a shame that it's all cartel coins and not credits. You don't have any option with credits. I mean, certainly that's nothing that's ever going to get on the GTN. So, yeah, if you want to change the way something looks, yeah, pay real money or just make do. We haven't really spoken about the dies yet, but I think that's a bit problematic at this point too, I would say.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, Matthew, talk a bit more about that. What have you heard on that? Because I've done nothing with the dies either.
Oh, the first thing I did when I heard the die system was coming out was, of course, level my artifice up. You know, finally, my artifice craft was actually able to do something that was worth doing. You know, with the addition of the, what was it, patch 2.0, it was cartel coins. The cartel market came out and gave people, was it 2.0? I think it was. The expansion, but it was before that. The cartel, you know, free to play. They added color crystals to the market that everyone could buy. Top end, you know, plus 41 endurance, plus 41 willpower, all that. You know, not willpower, but crit and power and all those ones. So it was almost. It's not pay to win. It was borderline pay to win with me a bit. It's like, well, what's the use of me being an artifice? I go out, I make normal color crystals like red, blue, green and stuff, and everyone's out there buying black reds and black blues and stuff off the cartel market. I can't make anything really unique, so to speak, to make it worth my while. Now they've finally added the dye system in, I'm like, oh yeah, I might be able to do something. Then on the first day, everyone floods the market with dyes, but the only good dyes you have to buy for 200 cartel coins, right? And 200 cartel coins, I think, I can't remember, was it like $5 or something? Or something around that, you know, and you don't get to choose what colors you want. So if I want to have black, like most people, I think you just want black or black-white, and they're the real rare ones, you're spending 50 to 100 bucks just gambling, you know, for a chance to get it. Yeah. And to try and get that for each piece of your gear, you're going to run out of money pretty quick. And then with Artifice, only being able to craft really crap-looking colors like, oh, what's some of the bad ones, like orange, brown or something, you know, putting all these weird colours. They didn't seem to have anything really that would sell too well on the GTN. I was like, well, what's the use, you know?
Yeah, I think that's that pretty well nails it. Hopefully they will change it, but they seem to be kind of nickel and diming people just to certainly try and drive them into buying scratches. And yeah, for you know, nice to have stuff like if you want the meditation throne or something like that. I mean, yeah, you know, the whales will go after that, but to colour your stuff, to actually get halfway decent colours, I don't think they should be, they shouldn't be doing that. Make it an item that you, okay, you have to pony up a reasonable amount of cash for, but at least let people have the option of spending a lot of money in a considered way, rather than just, oh, maybe just one more, maybe just one more, maybe just one more. I mean, there's a reason people have a gambling problem.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you charge 2,000 cartel coins and you get the whole palette of colours. That they're doing something like that, they'd still make a lot of money and make a lot more people happier.
Or something, I wouldn't say exactly like Guild Wars 2. I mean, I haven't played it that I played it a while at launch, going back to Guild Wars 2, people still play it. I play it every now and then still. But something like their dice system, was okay. It wasn't the best, but it's a hell of a lot better than Tor's. I mean, you'd go out to their cash shop, you'd buy a die pack. It's still random. But if you were lucky enough on me, I got within my first two or so die packs, I got the Abyss Black, which is Abyss die. It's like really dark black. And I didn't have to go out and barter or gamble for it again, because as soon as I unlocked it, I had that in the die palette that had been unlocked for that character. I mean, I don't know if they've updated it since then, so it's account-wide. That would be the ideal way of doing it. If you unlock a colour, have your whole account, or even if in Tor they could do it for your legacy, that'd be something interesting if they could work it out that way. So then your legacy has access to that colour, because at least that way it's kind of like giving something back to the community, whereas at the moment they're really just trying to nickel and dime, and a lot of people are noticing it. I mean, with the upcoming... and we're probably going to talk about this later, with the upcoming server transfers to the US, you know, are people really going to stick around with this game? You know, we could probably go back to that later. But
no, yeah. That's a good segue, because my next comment was going to be is, have we heard any more? I mean, they just said it's coming at some stage. I haven't heard any confirmation of dates yet.
No, a couple of days ago, they said before or shortly after 2.2, they said it'd be pretty, so it's coming real close
now.
Yeah,
so it won't be far off, yeah. But I mean, otherwise, you know, the game, I think you're right, there'll be big impacts on the local community with that. It'll be fascinating to see. But I mean, overall, the game seems to be travelling well. I know I've spent a lot of time in there having a bit of a honeymoon with the game, and basically playing no World of Warcraft as the trade-off. But, you know, but then I'm not hearing a lot from BioWare about future plans either. So I think it's a bit of a lull for them at the moment, at least publicly.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I don't know if necessarily that's the case, because they seem to, the community canteeners seem to be ticking along fairly frequently. I think Eric Musco's been pretty good trying to respond to people as fully as he can. Yeah. Certainly what he had to say about 2.1 and referring to, you know, for people that were thinking that 2.1's, we've missed an update cycle for any meaningful content because it's all cartel market stuff. But then he points out that 2.2 will be with us in, June the 11th. So that's actually within the 8-week cycle of, or the cadence, as they call it, the Hutt Cartel.
Good point.
Yeah.
So getting two updates 4 weeks apart. So, you know, we'll have to see what the next one is. But there's 2.2 doesn't have any cartel market stuff in it, I believe. So
hopefully there'll be some more substantive stuff then. Yeah.
Yeah, and probably some tweaks to what's already gone. I mean, they're probably just seeing how people were reacting. It just seems to be the way they do it. Because let's face it, the whole die pack thing was not something they ever really planned on introducing. I mean, you can tell that's the case. If you have to look at some of the armor sets, and I'm not even talking about the lore armor sets that you can't change the colors on at all, but some armor items have a tertiary color as well, which doesn't get affected by any of the primary modules, the secondary modules, or the primary / secondary modules.
So exactly. There's a bit of tweaking still to go.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Crazy
basically.
Since Peter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't even launch with the matched to chest. I mean, I remember being in beta when they turned that off and there was a huge howl. Yeah, there was not a lot of happy people there, but that's just the forums for you.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
there's crazy damn... Sorry?
They had a few issues at launch with that, though. So they were within their rights to remove it if it's causing issues. I mean, it's understandable. At the same time, it was kind of annoying walking around like a circus clown Sith Lord, like Darth Pink or something, like you see on the fleets now, Darth Pink. Oh, look a bit strange,
yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah, I think that will calm down eventually.
Well, it's just like idiots that don't use proper role-playing names on their characters. It's just...
Exactly, yeah.
Tacky
yeah.
shit.
Morons.
Morons, that's right. So we'll jump off Star Wars. We're probably going to see. The last thing I was going to mention, and most people will be aware of it anyway, is the Return of the Gree event is running until, I think it's the 27th of May. I haven't even bothered. I got bored with it last time, although I understand it's good if you're rep grinding with the Gree, but I'm assuming none of you guys have been doing any of that.
Could not care less.
No,
Ilum ceased to exist for me a long time ago.
I gave it a fair go on the first event time, but then when I found out that they're going to stop it before I had enough days to get... Because each day, I'm not a raider. I mean, I would love to raid, but the population at the moment and the fact that my guild's pretty much dead isn't allowing me to experience the end game like I would like to experience it, so to speak. So pretty much playing with myself and my girlfriend, we just go out, we do the Grey event, we get our one token, you know, the Grey, what was they called? The Grey Helix cubes, whatever they are, for and then we get back to the vendor and we look and it's like 24 commendations or Helix things for me to get that sniper rifle. I was not able to get that after the first event entered. I'm like, so I did all that. I only got like 8 or something. Whereas raiders could go down the xenobiologist and get a few each drop or something, you know. And I was really pissed at that they weren't helping people in my position who maybe don't have enough time to play 10 hours a day or something. Yeah. Which I can on the weekends, you know.
I mean, I think BioWare's still tending towards making these events more like using WoWspeaker Dark Moon Fair type thing than some of the nicer events that you see that you can get through in a week or 10 days.
Yeah.
But
around patch 2.2, they said they will be redoing it because at the moment, myself and Catherine, we're going through it in patch, I think, what is it? We're patch 2.1 at the moment, and it's currently still level 50 mobs, and myself and my girlfriend being level 55, we just floor through the mobs. Yeah. You know, it's pretty much cakewalk. But after 2.2, I think it was, said they're upping it to level 55 mobs. So that's going to make it a bit harder for us to do it, but they've extended it from, I think it was 7 days at the moment, they're doing it for to 2 weeks at level 55. So we may or may not have enough time, hopefully, to get the tokens so I can finally get the sniper rifle that I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah. No, they're tweaking. And, all right, we will jump off. The very last thing is I actually ended up joining a guild, which is a bit amazing in itself with my main toon. I just happened to have a lovely group help me through a hard mode flashpoint that I was totally sucking at. They were patient, great, and then still asked me to join their guild at the end. So
it was the name that did it.
Yeah, with Wheeze and Henry. it's my main. And even after, you know, having to babysit me through the whole hard mode flashpoint, they still offered me membership. And I thought any guys that are willing to do that are worth being part of. So I'd like to give a huge shout out to my guild whose name I cannot remember.
Priceless.
Yeah. Bravo. Bravo.
Desperados.
Yeah. I can't remember, but I've been leveling my trooper, so I haven't actually interacted with the guild at all, which, Mark, having had me in your guild before, you know that that's par for the course.
Pretty much, yeah.
All right, let's jump off Star Wars The Old Republic and do a very quick Secret World. I probably was wrong on the lull in Star Wars The Old Republic, but it's putting along quite steadily with no huge news from the Secret World beyond the fact they're talking a little bit more about the Tokyo stuff that's coming. And the only notable thing I could really see to mention was that Joel Bielus has confirmed that the majority of the missions in Tokyo will be solo, aside from the main story mission. So for non-sociable people like myself, that's good news. So, and Tokyo, it shouldn't be that far off as far as the new content. Now, quick rounds. I know, Mark, I don't think you've ever played Secret World, have you?
Yeah, I've got a DSW account.
Yeah, so you...
I don't play it often, but I've got it, yeah.
Yeah. And Matthew?
No, I haven't played since closed beta, I don't think.
And Simon, I know you probably haven't had a chance with the PC to play recently.
No, I have not at this point.
So this will be a short one, but I actually spent 5 or 6 hours this weekend playing The Secret World, and actually I think I'm finally starting to get the game. So I'm actually able to beat mobs more times than not now, and I'm actually progressing. So I think I've got my skills up to a particular level and balanced things well enough that I'm actually starting to have fun, or even more fun in the game. So it's just, I just love the atmosphere of that damn game.
Is it still creepy?
It's still creepy. And I've moved on from King's Mouth to the Savage Coast, and I'm probably about halfway through that. And I just love the fairground on the Savage Coast. It's always been particularly creepy.
Yeah.
So,
good. It's very H.P. Lovecraft, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Yeah. I mean, I know some haters, e.g. Gale, don't like it graphically, but, the atmosphere's got it all as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, well, look, she's going to love the new Xbox, because they've got a high resolution dog in Call of Duty.
See?
She's going to love that.
Remember the first time in COD 4 when you're going through, it's like a grassy field, and you first see this dog eating some guy, Russian guy's corpse, and you're like, oh, okay. And they say you could sneak around, or you can shoot one. So you shoot one, then a whole pack comes. And the first time it jumps on top of you and you got to snap its neck, that creeped the shit out of me.
Well, you'll be pleased to know we'll be talking more about the Xbox later for those people still listening, thinking about turning it off right about now. Hang around for some Xbox discussion later. So that's about it for The Secret World then, if I'm really the only one that's played it last 3 weeks, but it's going along well. So let's jump on to one of the many reasons we asked Mark to join us this week, and that's Neverwinter. So I mentioned last episode that it had launched and it was doing well. They had server queues. But Mark, over to you. How have you found it, the good, bad and the ugly of Neverwinter?
Look, I'm really enjoying the game. I mean, have any of you actually had a chance to try it out at all, or just nobody?
No, it's been a time issue.
No, it's pretty good. I wrote just a little thing, which I'll read out about the game that I kind of wrote earlier quickly. So Neverwinter is a new free-to-play MMORPG. It's more action-based, which it's kind of like an arcade play style. If you've played Terra Online, you'll know what I mean. It's not like WoW where you've got all the different buttons in your taskbar. This one's very limited. I think you only get like maybe 4 or 5 skills on your bar at one time. And even your mouse buttons, your left and right, get a skill assigned to them, so it's a bit target-based. The game's officially in open beta, as you know, but as the in-game store is already open for business, it's pretty much a launch. They can call it what they want, but yeah, it's a launch. The game itself is based on Forgotten Realms' campaign world from Dungeons & Dragons, approximately 100 years after the spell plague events, for those that read the novels. There is a Neverwinter series of novels, and it's my understanding that the MMO is based just after those. There's a number of playable races, as per usual in most MMOs, each with their own racial bonuses. If you purchase the Hero of the North pre-order pack, you can also play as a Dark Elf, if you're a Driftwarden fan. However, that pack will set you back a tidy $200 at the moment. But I'm told that Dark Elves will be available to everyone in the near future. As far as classes go, there's the usual DPS and tank-type fighter classes, Cleric for healing, Wizard for DPS and crowd control, and a Rogue for just pure DPS. There are also various companions a player can obtain for some bonus DPS healing and tanking. I'll be honest, since Star Wars, it's the first MMO that I've honestly enjoyed. It's very easy to get into and play, and the quests and surroundings are varied enough to keep you interested. One of the best features of this game, I think, is the Foundry. What the Foundry is it allows players to create their own campaigns, and it's pretty in-depth. It's a bit complicated, so not everybody's going to be able to jump in and start doing their own right away, but there are some guides out there already. And I have to say that some of the early player made content is already shaping up to be well written and enjoyable to play. The game is not without its issues, however, as a beta, the game has had the odd bug. The queues have been sorted. I've been in a queue for well over a week now. But their in-game store prices are a bit too high, if you ask me. Cryptic, however, have been on the ball as far as fixes go, and they're keeping an eye on public feedback. I really recommend it to any MMO fans, Dungeons & Dragons fans, of course, and anybody that wants a first taste of MMOs. It's a really easy one to get into, so give it a try.
Thank you. Yeah, and I know the Foundry's the bit that fascinated me and nearly convinced me to download it. And I know our two writers, Luke and... I feel really bad now. I haven't got it in front of me, but our other wonderful Wayne and Luke, who wrote things, both mentioned the Foundry as one of the key things.
Yeah.
So how different can you get in the creation of content with that?
It is pretty good. Eh? So, like some of them, of course, anybody can submit their Foundry idea and they've built it. Some of them are really poor, of course, but some of them actually are really in-depth. I mean, you know, they can last for anywhere from 10 minutes to over an hour. So, like I was speaking to one guy, and the one that he's working on, he's put a number of chapters into it, and he was saying he's already put over 100 hours into this particular one. Jeez. And I have to say that even though it's early stages yet, some of the content that people are coming out with are better than what's in the game itself. So I think it's a really good thing, because even when you get to end game, these player-made dungeons or campaigns, should I say, adjust to the person's level that's in there. Right. So the highest level player that's in there, that's what the level of the mobs are in there. So anything, I think anybody can play Foundries from 15 onwards, I believe. Yeah, look, it's basically limited by the person's imagination. I believe they are going to be adding more content into the Foundry so that people can do more and more things. But I think it's really good. In-game, of course, there is the dungeons and whatnot that are in the game, but it also means that when people are taking out new content every week, you're never going to get bored, really. I know I won't, because there's always going to be something new to do. And it's not always the same maps. Although there is like maps pre-built, for people's campaigns, they can actually make their own. The tool sets are all there for making their own and whatnot. So, I think, you know, you'll get a few good people making them that'll pump them out weekly probably and give us, as I say, loads and loads of fun instances to run every week. There'll be something new.
It's always surprised me that a lot of the current stable of MMOs haven't got on board with this. I mean, Blizzard do with StarCraft and right back to the original Warcraft 3. I don't think it was in before Warcraft 3. You had custom maps. StarCraft did, and then StarCraft 2. But to actually have it for the 3D first person stuff is great.
Yeah,
and I think that'll be what will mark the longevity of that game.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like Minecraft, Simon.
Well, and EVE Online.
Yeah, and EVE, that was the other one I was going to mention, yeah.
I mean, you get community creation going in these games, and hell, yeah, I don't see how it can lose, even with server rollbacks.
Oh, you mean as far as, say, losing content via rollback, or?
No, they just... it was Neverwinter that had the problem with the economy crashing, wasn't it? So they had to do a server rollback.
It was a 7-hour rollback, I believe. I think there was an exploit that they found that people were abusing, that were basically giving them their Zen, which is their gold that you would buy for real money. It was basically allowing people to give themselves unlimited amounts of that. So not only was it a big oversight, but I suppose there was an element of fraud in there as well. So,
From memory, I think what was happening is they found that you could make negative bids, so you could bid negative 100, whatever, or negative 1,000,000, whatever, and people were bidding negative ridiculous amounts of money, winning all the auctions, and that the whole thing just went completely.
I can imagine.
Yeah,
it crashed quite literally.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, but look,
it's good to find these things out early on, though.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think this is a game that's around for a long time. So.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of games around for a long time, World of Tanks falls into that category to some extent. So, Matthew, any updates you want to give on where how it's travelling?
Yeah. Well, 8.5 came out probably 2, maybe 3 weeks ago now, I think. And that added a new German tank line into the already quite large German tank tree. They've finally given us, or us German tank players like myself, quite a decent tank that is after World War II era, because up until now, all the German technology stopped at 1942 to 1944 kind of era, while all the other nations had, you know, Cold War almost era tanks from 1950s to the 1960s. So you can see that the German statistics weren't really up there on par in terms of competitiveness against, say, you know, the Americans or the French and the British that they added, and Chinese and such. They had a lot better tanks. But when it, now with the Leopard 1, which I think even the Australian Army used a few years ago, but recently switched over to the Abrams, the American Abrams, with the addition of that as a Tier 10 medium, that's given us more of a competitive edge and something a bit different than the big, slow, heavy armoured German tank style, which was prevalent, or I can't even say the word, but you know, it was, we had big, slow tank destroyers with big armour. We had big, slow, heavy tanks with lots of armour. We had big, slow, damage-dealing tanks with heaps of armour. And then we had a big, fat, medium tank that was fast, but it was still a big, fat target with a bit of armour. But now we've got quite a low-profile, fast-moving, practically zero armour in terms of Tier 10 tanks. So we've got a really nice, fast, agile sniper rifle that just runs around the battlefield, and it's amazing. I mean, I spend each day playing a couple of games, if not more, in my Leopard 1. I just love the tank to bits. It's great. And I think I even wrote a review up on
yes,
your site
you did.
About
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah. So people should definitely check that out because there's some good stats comparisons there. But, yeah, it's just one of those games that keeps on keeping on, showing no sign of declining, still innovating. And I know, Mark, you said you still play it here and there.
Yeah, I do, yeah. Yeah, I've still got a count on the Southeast Asia server.
So I'm just always tempted. I say that every episode. And so we'll launch into a whole bunch of other stuff that we thought we might talk about. And I think we might as well jump into the Xbox stuff. So maybe starting with you, Simon, because I know you, I don't know whether you live tweeted, but you did a really good wrap up on Twitter of a lot of the key stuff. So starting with you, what's your take on the Xbox One?
Well, first of all, 3 a.m., I should Coco. There's no way I'm getting up at 3 a.m.
No, that's why I was thinking, no, surely you didn't. Yeah.
No, I didn't. I did. It was the first thing I started reading in the watched as much of the news conference or event, whatever you want to call it, as I could. It was markedly different from the Sony one. I mean, the first thing they showed you was the plastic box everything goes into, so you couldn't help but feel that they were reacting to the major criticism of the Sony reveal, which was, where's the box? There's no box. So yeah, the first thing they showed us was the box, and that was pretty much it, really. Everything else seemed to deal pretty much with the console's multimedia capabilities, specifically TV and being able to flip between TV and video games and Skype and Twitter and TV and movies and sport and TV. Yeah. But to be perfectly fair, both conferences were, I think, the companies really showing the broad direction for their respective entries into the console market. Sony's was really games. They brought loads of developers, came out being very enthusiastic about it. We saw the controller, saw the new iCamera, more or less, and no box. Microsoft were showing all the multimedia capabilities, and I think they've said outright a few times that the games, you'll see them at E3. E3 is where we'll be doing the games, because this is a two-stage reveal process. So, yes, basically the Twitter was on fire, I think.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Most people in our sphere were pretty disenchanted with what they saw, because there's just a total lack of coverage of games. I mean, okay, yes, they did show us how beautiful the rendering is going to be in the new Call of Duty. We saw a new version of Forza, and we saw, what was the other thing? Shit.
Monkey Island?
No. Oh, Madden. Another Madden.
Oh, yeah.
So nothing. Oh, there was Quantum something. There was something, but the only really new thing they showed us was done as a live action film clip, basically. So that didn't really tell us anything, and everything else was really focused on the multimedia TV. But that Microsoft have been very trying to compensate. The day after, anyone who's subscribed to Xbox got an email that said Xbox One, what it is. And I thought, yeah, if you're having to send an email like that at the day after your big event, clearly you've missed a number of objectives in helping people understand what the hell's going on.
Yeah. And before I jump on to Mark's commentary on how beautiful the Xbox looks, the one thing that stood out for me doing the readouts was the Kinect stuff, and that's because I'm doing some study in the area. The fact they're claiming that the Kinect will now be able to pick up fingertips and so on, if they do pull that off, that is going to be the potential game changer as far as the consoles go, the one that will attract the most people, because the potential for fine motor control of games is huge.
I think the new Kinect, apart from looking like HAL 9000's evil brother, it's actually quite a remarkable piece of equipment. It can even detect your heartbeat, apparently, or your heart rate. I'm not sure why it wants to do that, but it can. But I thought one of the amusing little ironies of it was Xbox.com was streaming it, or you could actually watch the live stream through your Xbox. Anyone who had a Kinect attached to it, the stream kept getting paused every time someone in the presentation said Xbox.
Okay, that's handy.
Because the Kinect was picking up someone saying Xbox and thinking, okay, hang on, let me just stop this. Okay, what did you want?
Yeah.
So that people had to keep resuming the stream. So I was thinking, yeah, and the fact that this thing's always going to be on to one degree or another, I mean, it's always going to be listening.
Yeah, it's the implementation that'll be interesting.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting. And one other little revealing fact. At this point, you could say, okay, well, both consoles, it's too early to tell. One of the revealing things is the type of memory the two machines are using. They both got 8 gig of RAM in them. The 360, not the 360, the Xbox One has got DDR3. And the PlayStation 4 has got DDR5. Difference between those two types of memory is DDR3 has low latency, and the DDR5 is the one that has high bandwidth. Now, the difference between those two is the reason your computer, your CPU, your main memory on your computer is still DDR3, not DDR5, is because it needs something that responds quickly.
Yeah.
Something where it can zip-zap wherever it needs to go, it can do it, and it can do it quickly. Your graphics card, however, will be using DDR5 because it's basically got to go from A to B as quickly as possible. So DDR5 tends to be more for things that are game-oriented, DDR3 is used for things that are more for more CPU multitasking.
Yeah, so it's well.
I think that's fairly telling just from a just on a basic hardware, and it kind of tallies with the two press conferences as well. PlayStation 4, gamey memory, gamey event, Xbox One, multimedia type memory, multimedia presentation. I don't think that's really going to shift too dramatically.
No. Good point.
And that's all I've got to say.
And Mark, I know you've just been obsessed with the beauty of the Xbox One. Do you want to comment further?
Look, I'm just not a big console fan. I've had an Xbox 360, I've had a PlayStation, but I haven't really been kept up to date on the Xbox One, as they're now calling it. I did read a couple of things that, I'll be honest, did put me off, and I don't know if they were true or if it's been changed or what, but those two issues were, one, you apparently always needed to be connected to even play single-player games, and I think anybody that doesn't have a reliable internet connection, especially those people that are out in the sticks, are going to have a problem with it there because they're not going to be able to play their machine if their internet's down. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's been changed or not because I know there was a lot of backlash over it. The other thing that I believe they wanted to do was when you buy a game, it's tied to your machine. So it'll kind of do away with the whole trading your games for other Xbox games. Now, I know my nephew, he does it all the time. He goes into EB Games and trades in his old games for newer ones and so on and so forth. So I think if that's the case, it's going to alienate him and others like him that do a lot of game trading. I think that's going to have an adverse effect on the likes of EB Games as well, because I know a lot of their business is through game trades, and if they can no longer do that on the Xbox, then you know they're going to have a problem with it too. And I know Sony were quick to come forward and go, we're not going to do that. So hopefully Microsoft will change their minds. I don't know. They may already have, as I say. I just haven't been kept up to date on it myself. But I won't be buying one. I'm kind of over consoles. I'll be sticking with my PC.
Fair enough. And Matthew, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think I'm the same, mate. I'm a PC guy myself. If I want to play a game, I want it to be on a machine that can handle it. I mean, consoles are built to play the games that are built for them, but when you're coming out with more newer and newer games, so to speak, consoles stagnate the gaming industry. When games are built for consoles, they stay the same. They never improve really much upon them.
Yeah.
When games are built for PC, you start to see games getting better. So I'm completely against the consoles, to tell you the truth. I'm just sick of games being made for consoles and seeing no improvement in the computer gaming industry. And I love seeing improvement in the computer gaming industry because I'm a computer gamer, I'm a computer technician. I love toying with new technology. If I'm not seeing new stuff come out, then it's just boring and old.
Yeah, fair point. And I mean, even on the Kinect stuff I was talking about, there's a PC equivalent coming out in June, and I pre-ordered it, the Leap Motion now, and it has a whole developer side, and you can create your own apps and stuff, and that's where the consoles, even with some of the really cool stuff, will totally let you down, because your ability to tweak that will be extremely limited compared to PCs. But that said, high-res dogs in Call of Duty.
Yep.
Say no more.
We won't.
All right. Now, Simon, back to you again. I believe we're going to talk about a new TV show that a lot of our listeners might be interested in.
Are we?
No, okay. We'll move on to the next thing then.
All right. I thought I might be able to just leave you hanging there for a second or two, but clearly not. A lot of you are probably already aware of it, but Disney, Lucasfilm have announced a new TV show called Star Wars Rebels coming in the autumn of 2014. That's the US autumn, obviously. You'd be pleased to know that the... what's his name now? It's the fella that was the producer on the Star Wars The Clone Wars, whose name I can never...
Dave Filoni, I think.
That sounds about right, yes.
Well, I thought you were going to say Jar Jar Binks. You got my hopes up.
No, because this all occurs between episodes 3 and 4. So much as the Clone Wars was between 2 and 3, this is between 3 and 4. So this is going to tie the inferior and the superior trilogies together.
So this is kind of like the birth of the rebellion kind of storyline then.
Exactly.
Could be interesting.
It could be, especially if it's of the same sort of quality. Let me see. Leading the development of the screenwriter producer, Simon Kinberg, who also worked on X-Men First Class, Sherlock Holmes, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Oh, well, we'll forget that one. He's going to be the writer for it, so that's a good start. Filoni's the executive producer, and executive producer Greg Weisman brings with him a wealth of animation experience with credits such as Young Justice, The Spectacular Spider-Man, and Gargoyles.
Is it animated?
It is animated, yes.
Oh, that sucks.
Is it? What type of animation? The 3D or the 2D stuff?
Computer animation.
Yeah. Ah, so kind of like the newer Clone Wars that recently got cancelled then.
Oh, yes.
Why can't they do a live-action TV series just for something different?
Well, there's one very good reason I can think of.
Money.
Well, no, it's much easier if your actors start giving you trouble. It's much easier to recast voice talent than it is a live-action actor. Although, don't tell that to the cast of The Simpsons, because that's the one show where it really doesn't hold true.
No. I just think they've been totally tainted by the Chewbacca Christmas special, and they've not done anything on live action on TV since.
Okay, A, it wasn't called that, and B, it doesn't exist. So shut up.
It does exist.
I've seen that.
I've seen it too.
Yep.
And if it did exist, that's where the Cathar first appeared. Another good reason not to talk about them.
It does exist, I'll guarantee you.
Shut up.
I always thought it was a fan-made film and just thought of it like that kind of thing.
I watched it.
There was even a Boba Fett cartoon in it as well, wasn't there?
Shut up.
You met Chewbacca's family, including the child, Wookiee.
Exactly. That's exactly what I remember.
Yep.
The best part of that was when the head got torn off his toy Bantha.
My hands were itching for a spray can and a lighter. All that hair. It would definitely be combustible, the old Wookiee.
Yeah,
the old white one was called Lumpy, wasn't he? He was funny.
Something like that.
So you know way too much about this.
It was called the Star Wars Holiday Special. I've just Googled it, and it was a 1978 American television special. Starred Harrison Ford, introduced the new character Boba Fett, who would appear in later films. And they visit, there you go, Chewbacca and Han Solo visit whatever, that however you pronounce his planet. Chewbacca's home world to celebrate Life Day.
Go on, pronounce it. I dare you.
No.
I can.
Kashyyyk?
Yeah.
Kashyyyk.
That's enough.
The special introduces three members of Chewbacca's family. His father, Itchy.
Is one of them called Scratchy?
I bet you one's called Lumpy.
You're right.
That one is called Lumpy.
His wife, Mala, and his son, Lumpy, later retconned to... Oh, I can't even... Lumpa Waroo. That's great.
Because that's so much better. it just sounds like an outback town now.
Oh, that's gold.
It was so terrible.
It was, but I remember it clearly.
Yes, thank you, CBS. Thank you for everything.
Sorry, keep going, Simon.
About what?
The Rebels TV show.
No, you've killed it. Google it. It's online. Go to StarWars.com. It's all there.
Do they have any trailers for it yet, or is it still just early?
No, they're still working on the pilot, so they won't have enough footage to do a trailer yet.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to use the story from the Force Unleashed, because the story behind the Force Unleashed games was the start of the Rebels, wasn't it? When it ended.
Yeah, it was. I just wish Starkiller wasn't involved in the whole thing. But, yeah, that's only because I'm a Vader fan, and seeing Vader being pushed around kind of made me question things.
Don't worry. There's nothing that these people like better than retconning things, so Starkiller will cease to exist.
First episode will be called The Curse of Lumpy. So, all right. So do you want to move on, Simon, or do you want to talk more about it?
It'll be Jack Sparrow and his first mate Lumpy sailing to Tatooine.
Yes. Being Disney, it'd probably look like Toy Story, and they'll probably put Woody and Buzz Lightyear in there too.
Yeah, I was just thinking that something Woody and Lumpy.
I'm going to try Lumpy. And find that on DVD.
Woody and Lumpy just sounds wrong somehow.
And it'll be wearing Buzz Lightyear's armor.
Yeah, even better. Well, there's plenty of that going on in Star Wars The Old Republic, color-wise. All right, Star Trek movie. Mark, I believe you... I'm assuming, Simon and Matthew, you haven't seen the Star Trek movie, nor have I.
I have seen it.
Oh, you have? There you go.
I'm quite happy to completely spoil it for you.
Well, let Mark spoil it first, and then you can jump in. So, Mark, how'd you find it?
Look, I actually liked it, and I'll probably get some abuse from Gail on Facebook later, because I know she had seen it, and she posted that she didn't like it. She said, she didn't like the story to it. But look...
Yeah, but she didn't like The Secret World. She got no credibility.
Well, look, I really liked it. I thought it was good. I thought it was good action. The special effects were excellent. Story, well, who goes to see an action movie for its story? I mean, let's be honest. But it wasn't too bad. The guy who played, what's his name, Cumberbatch or whatever it is, that plays the bad guy, he was really good in it. So, look, I liked it. If you're a Star Trek fan, go and see it. If you're just an action film fan, go and see it. It's definitely worth a watch in my book.
It looked pretty on the trailer. Simon?
I was pleasantly surprised. I tried not to expect anything too much from it or listen to anything that might spoil any of the little surprises. I don't really think there's much I can say about it that wouldn't ruin it if you haven't seen it. It's worth seeing. You'll get your money's worth. Definitely get your money's worth.
Cool. It just looks so great on the trailer. I'm hanging to go and see it, so I must do so. Good stuff.
I did hear from some people that saw the 3D version, though, that it made them feel a little bit on the queasy side. But I saw it 2D, and it was... spectacular that way. So if you're not worried about the extra dimension and you're a little bit nauseous, 2D.
Cool.
It's a pretty good film.
Well, speaking of 2D, I'm going to very briefly mention a book review, although I'm thinking I might hold it off because I've only read the first five chapters, but I like it enough to recommend it. And it's a book very originally titled You, Y-O-U, so it'll be a bitch to find in most places. By Austin Grossman, Grossman. And for anyone that was born in the 70s that grew up with all the original computers and then consoles, it's a story about some game developers who grew up with that stuff, set up a game company in the 1990s and their adventures. And it's just funny from start to finish as far as the little bits of detail that we'll all remember, like hole punching 5.25 floppy inch discs to double side them, which made me laugh alone. So Austin Grossman, You. There's a quick book review. Anything else, guys? Before PAX Oz. So,
well, actually, talking about books, I've got something I wouldn't mind saying.
Please do.
I don't know if you guys have ever read any of Raymond E. Feist's novels. Have you ever heard of him?
Yes, indeedy. Right, fairy tale blocks.
Yeah, well. He's just done his last novel on the Midkemian world. I think he's done like 30 novels in total. I've actually just booked tickets. He's going to be doing a book tour here in Australia just in a couple of months. So he's going to be in Melbourne on June the 25th, I think. So Robinson's Bookstores are selling tickets to go and see that. So I'm going to be taking along all my books, see if I can get him to sign them. But good fantasy novels. And yeah, he's just done his last one. So if anybody's interested in going along, check out Robinson's Bookstore website and you can get the tickets there.
Because the last one, is it The Magician or something like that? I've seen it in a bunch of bookstores. Yeah.
Magician was his first book, and this last one, which is his final book on that kind of series, is Magician's End.
There you go.
Yep.
Nice. PAX Oz. So we mentioned it the last few episodes. So Christy, Simon, and I'll be doing a live podcast from there. Mark, I'm a shit. Are you going to PAX? I hadn't.
I really wanted to, but when I went to get tickets, they'd already been sold out. Gone, so yeah. At this point, it doesn't look like I'm going to be able to get there.
No worries. So, still, I said if you, we'd love to catch up with you. Anything else from anyone before I wrap it up?
One little thing.
Yep.
If anyone doesn't like the new loading screen for Tor, you can change it.
Ah, because I hate it. So that's good. How?
Apparently, well, this is something off of Reddit, but I've heard it mentioned on a couple of other podcasts. Our friends over at Utinicast for one. What you do is you go into your SWTOR folder, into the retail client folder, and then in there, there's one called loading screens, and you just need to add a JPEG file, .jpeg, not JPEG, and rename it loading screen. So
any JPEG?
Any JPEG, and there's people have been having a lot of fun with it, shall we say.
I can imagine. Oh, that's cool. I'm gonna find a picture of Lumpy.
Gosh.
Lumpy loading screen. Doesn't get any better than that.
Started something.
That's going to be the name of the episode now, Lumpy loading screen.
Yeah, it is. I've already named it on the post. It's called The Curse of Lumpy.
Yep.
See, Simon's gone very quiet now.
Brain hemorrhaging.
He's looking for a torrent of the Christmas special.
Yeah, that's what it'll be. Leave that with me, Simon. I'll send it to you.
Just make sure your life insurance is paid up before PAX, that's all.
That's when I'll present it to you. All right, we'll wrap it up there. As always, we'd love to hear from you on contact@oceanicgamer.com, and that's where we always welcome contributions for our weekly feedback session, which is one of the biggest hits of this podcast so far. We're also on Twitter, twitter.com/TheOceanicGamer, same for Facebook. Simon's Twitter is twitter.com/RPGBeatsRL. Either of you boys like to shout out a Twitter or anything, go for it.
No,
that's all good.
Don't use the Twitters.
No, it's all right. It's all good. And we'll be back. Apologies for the extra week, by the way. That was my fault. I was gallivanting with work in another city, so couldn't do the podcast. But we'll be back hopefully in 2 weeks, and we'll talk then. And big thanks to Mark and Matthew for jumping in.
Yeah, no problem, but it's really nice to be thanked.
Well, it would have been just my luck to have signed off and like, had I'm you sorry, say, yeah, thanks for the thanks.
I just couldn't believe it. I'm listening to the 50th episode special. I know you've heard this so many times. Listening to the 50th episode special, all these people getting thanked, including the friggin' TeamSpeak host, who nobody has even used it. But where was Mark?
I know. It's the curse of Lumpy. Get the staff these days. Exactly.
It's the curse of Lumpy, Mark. I wouldn't worry about it.
I think that's what it is. Yeah. If I was wearing a bloody Woogie suit, I bet you
would have been. Oh, you would have been in, absolutely.
Yep.
Look, we've had a barbecue together to get over this. We've moved on now.
It's true.
No, you haven't.
Clearly, there's still issues.
Yeah, all evidence right. The contrary, my friend.
It's been fun, boys. We'll talk soon.
Bye. Okay. Thanks, guys.
From the coldest depths of interstellar space to the nastiest packed urban sprawls of Coruscant, this was Flashpoint.